They should look at their sources and do a better job of determining whether they have any merit or any validity, or are they just blowhard loudmouths?
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me as always on Twitter at redrock_beeble. Go and follow Basketball Monster on Twitter as well, which is at BaskMonster, for all the updates as things go down during the day. And of course, follow the rest of the Locked On NBA podcast network at LockedOnNBAnet, and you can find out whenever the new episode for your favorite team is out over there. I'm sure you all have a favorite team, and you can go, or even if it's not a favorite team, you can go and find out some more in-depth information about the players that you want to hear about, what's going on those certain squads. So LockedOnNBAnet is for that. We are back to talk about all the action from Sunday, to cover the teams across the weekend that don't play either Sunday or Monday, to preview Monday's games, to preview the week ahead. There's tons of stuff we've got to get to, so
let's get to it.
Oh, Michael Bolton, how I've missed your voice. Let's get straight into week 13 of the NBA, and we'll start by looking at the way it breaks down from a daily changes league point of view. It's one of those weeks where we have quite a few streaming opportunities, so let's have a look at how the week shakes out. On Monday, we've got a very sexy 8 games, a perfect DFS number. Tuesday, we've got 4 games, so streaming opportunities on both Monday and Tuesday. Wednesday, a busy one, 11 games. Thursday with 4, Friday with 9, Saturday with 7, Sunday with 4. So realistically, you could potentially stream players in minimum 5 days this week, and probably 6. That Friday 9 game slate is a little bit up in the air, depends on the way your roster looks, but you could realistically Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday be able to stream in. Now, most leagues have a cap on the acquisitions you can use during the week, so using those streams or maximizing those ads is going to be really key in terms of getting head-to-head wins this week. And the way you do that is by trying to work out how you can get 2-for-1s and back-to-backs and pseudo-back-to-backs and maximizing games played for those additions. And that's something that we like to do on this podcast. So let's have a look at how we can work that out. Now, if I'm going to look at streaming days as being Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, there are a few teams we can really target here, and a couple that we can target, you know, significantly to try and get some value out of our acquisitions for the week. On Monday and Tuesday, we will see that Toronto and the Sacramento Kings have a back-to-back, the only two teams that have a back-to-back. And in fact, these two teams, they play 4 games this week, and all 4 of those games are on quality game day. So you could add a Raptor, you could add a Kings player, and then you could be able to use them 4 games this week. And that's very, very rare that you can add a player and have all of their games be able to be used. So the Raptors and the Kings, they have that Monday, Tuesday back-to-back. The Raptors and the Kings have the Tuesday, Thursday pseudo back-to-back. The Raptors and the Kings have the Thursday, Saturday pseudo back-to-back as well. So players like DeLon Wright, who should probably be owned anyway, Jakob Poeltl, you could go and add CJ Miles, the Jedi, OG Anunoby perhaps, maybe Bebe, but probably not, maybe Pascal Siakam for your deeper leagues from the Raptors. For the Kings, man, anyone that you'd think thinking of, oh, I'm not sure about the Kings, you add them for this week because it's a perfect situation. De'Aaron Fox, Budrick Hield, Bogdan Bogdanovic, Will Cauley-Stein, who should be owned anyway, Georgie Hill, who should probably be owned anyway. You can add these guys, even Garrett Temple, maybe in a 14 team league, you can add him because you're going to be able to use him 4 times during the week. Now you can say, oh, what if Temple only plays 22 minutes a game? Well, that's 88 minutes you'll be able to use him during the week. Whereas someone you add that only plays 1 quality game or 2 quality games, what are you getting out of them? 20 minutes? 40 minutes maybe? Say they play 26 minutes a game in 2 games. That's 52 minutes of action. Garrett Temple gives you 88 minutes of action. So that is really important to pay attention to. We know the Kings are an absolute shit show. They used a completely different starting lineup. Again, nothing makes sense with what they do in terms of rotations. It changes every single game. But a guy like Fox, a guy like Cauley-Stein, Labissiere even, who we would assume will play in all 4 games, but that's a rough assumption given the dickery that goes on with Dave Yeager and that Kings rotation. But these guys, this is the perfect opportunity to go and use them. The Kings and the Raptors are the only team that have that Monday, Tuesday back-to-back. For the Tuesday-Thursday pseudo back-to-back, there are two of the three teams that have it. The other one that's got it is the Lakers. So you look at guys like Brook Lopez, if he's around, that's a good ad there. You can look at Larry Nance Jr. You can look at Josh the Hitman Hart. Always an excuse to use the song. I'm not a big Jordy Clarkson fan, but if he's around, you can add him for that Tuesday, Thursday. And then to wrap it up, we've got a Thursday, Saturday pseudo back-to-back. Not only do the Raptors and the Kings have that one there, but the Lakers also have that pseudo back-to-back. So you can add a Lakers player on Tuesday, use them Tuesday, use them Thursday, use them Saturday, and that's three games for the price of one. So, yeah, realistically, you can get, for three ads, you can get a significant amount of games. You can add a Kings guy on Monday, a Raptors guy on Monday, and a Lakers guy on Tuesday. That's three acquisitions. And then you can get 11 games out of those three acquisitions. That is a huge, huge boost. Where a lot of times you use three acquisitions during the week, you might only get three games out of them, maybe five games out of them. It depends on how it works. But that is a huge, huge amount to be able to get 11 games out of three additions at the start of your week. So pay some attention to that, and there's going to be some value. And if you do it smart, this is all not going to guarantee you a head-to-head victory, but it's going to put you in a competitive spot or maybe snag you an extra one or two categories, which as we approach fantasy playoffs, and in some leagues, we might only be a month away from fantasy playoffs beginning. It is important to be able to snag those extra one or two categories. The only other team that's involved in these streaming days, apart from the Kings, apart from the Raptors and the Lakers, is the San Antonio, the San Antonio Spurs on that Thursday-Saturday pseudo back-to-back and the Clippers on that Thursday-Saturday pseudo back-to-back. Now, the Spurs, we don't know exactly what's going to be happening with Kawhi Leonard and his shoulder. Pop said that, and this is, people shit themselves. Leonard's got a partial tear in his shoulder. Oh my God, it's all over. Everything's over. And it could be bad. We know that. But the other thing we need to remember is that a partial tear is a sprain. Every time you sprain your ankle, there is a partial tear. That's what it is. So the words are aggressive and they sound bad. Oh man, he's torn his shoulder. That's terrible. That's terrible. But it's a sprain. And yeah, Michael Wright is reporting that the Spurs, they're not unhopeful. I think hopeful would be the wrong word, but they think that he can maybe play on Thursday. So we're going to miss what, one, two games out of Kawhi? Maybe. So they think he can play through it. They're not concerned that it's serious, but that aggressive terminology of a tear in the shoulder is something that people look at it and start shitting themselves. So don't panic, trade away Kawhi Leonard. Maybe check your owner, the owner of Kawhi in your league, see if he's panicking, trying to get him for cheap. I've heard of him going for some pretty cheap deals in certain leagues. There was one I saw that he went for Taj Gibson. Once the owner panicked and saw the tear part of that report. But remember, a tear is a sprain. A sprain is a tear. It's the degree of tear, how far it's gone through, all that sort of stuff that's important. But what we're hearing again is this is not a serious situation, which brings me all the way back around that maybe Kawhi misses that Thursday, Saturday back-to-back. So Kyle Anderson, Davis Bertans, Bryn Forbes, these guys get some extra minutes in that situation. You might be able to use them. But of course, the teams we're really looking at is Toronto, it's the Kings, and it's the Lakers. That's where you can really make the most bang for your buck in terms of getting that, that fantasy value. The other thing we want to look at is, yeah, teams who play three games in four nights, where if there is a hot free agent, you might be able to get those three games in four nights and then move on to another guy. Starting on Monday, the Clippers, the Raptors, and the Kings all play three games in four nights. Starting on Tuesday, the Blazers and the Magic start a three-game in four-night run. It's also important to note that for DFS is that when you get to the end of that, those players will tend to underperform what they might do. And that's something we do have baked into our DFS projections on Basketball Monster. And then on Wednesday, there are six teams that begin a three-game in four-night run. It's the Clippers, the Nets, the Warriors, the Nuggets, the Wizards, and the Hornets. And maybe you can make use of some of that information to structure it up for your team, depending on how your roster looks and your roster spots, whether you can actually get enough action out of those players in those games. If we want to talk about weekly leagues now, we want to know which teams have got the most games. The four-game teams have got the Nets, the Nuggets, the Warriors, the Pacers, the Clippers, the Bucks, Wolves, Pelicans, Blazers, Kings, and Raptors all have four games. The three-game group, there's the Hawks, there's the Hornets, the Bulls, the Cavs, Mavericks, Pistons, Rockets, Lakers, Heat, Knicks, Thunder, Magic, Spurs, and Wizards. And then there are five teams with two games or less. The Grizzlies, the Suns, and the Jazz all have just two games. And the Sixers and the Celtics only have the one game. They are traveling over to London to play in the London game, so they have only one game this week. So, of course, all your Sixers guys, Joel Embiid, Benny Simmons, JJ Redick, of course, TJ McConnell for your deeper leagues, Dario Saric, Bob Cove, all those guys, it's impossible to use them in a weekly league. Same for the Celtics, Al Horford, Kyrie Irving, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Marcus Smart, Terry Rozier, whoever it is that you got, one game from them in a weekly league, it's just not going to cut it in the majority of situations. Of course, deeper leagues, you know, getting one game out of Kyrie might be better than getting two games out of Dylan Brooks or three games out of some other shit kicker that's on the back end of your roster. But that's something you can check out and on our schedule analyzer over on Basketball Monster. The important situations you're going to have to make decisions on is on your three-game week players as in terms of schedule quality. A Hornets player playing three games is much different than a Mavericks player playing three games if they're relatively similar. Because the Mavericks, they take on the Lakers, the Hornets, and the Magic. Really good matchups. The Hornets, they take on the Mavericks, which can be a tough one. The Jazz and the Thunder, some really good defenses there and some slower paced teams also. So that does have a pretty significant impact on what's going to be allowed from those teams in terms of fantasy stats and pace and shooting and all that sort of stuff. So it's important to check all of those things out when making those decisions. Of course, again, that's all baked into our weekly projections, which is really helpful in setting your weekly lineups over on Basketball Monster, whether it's for head-to-head leagues or rotisserie leagues. You can check that all out. And of course, check how it all impacts your opponent as well when setting those lineups up. That is all of the action, I guess, for the weekly leagues and the daily changes league, preparing you for week 13. Now, what I do on the Monday shows is I recap all of Sunday's games, I preview all of Monday's games, but because I don't do the podcast across the weekends, there are a few teams that might slip through the cracks. So let's talk about those teams who either don't feature on Monday or didn't play on Sunday. The first one of those is the Orlando Magic. We saw Mario Hezonja step into a starting role with John Simmons struggling, and Hezonja produced pretty much every time he's been given the minutes this season. Hezonja's put up good numbers. I don't imagine that Simo is going to be out for very long, so Hezonja likely moves back to the bench. But you know my thoughts on John Simmons. I don't think he's very good, but the thing is that Frank Vogel and the Magic will give him those minutes over Hezonja. So Mario is going to be stuck playing the backup minutes behind Azar Gordon and maybe a few there behind Jono Simmons, but it's going to make him more of a 16 to 18 team league sort of player. Lord Alfred Payton's going strong at the moment. Aaron Gordon also looking really good. For the Sixers, I talked about them a little bit already. They do go to London for the one game this week, so really hard to use any of those guys. Bob Cove still struggling to a degree. We're going to get Markel Fultz back at some point. Lots of questions regarding Markel Fultz, where I see him. Is he worth a stash? I still think he's going to be really good. I'm not overly concerned about this start that he's had to his NBA career. I think that he is still a really interesting buy low dynasty guy. If his owner is like convinced that he's shit or he wasted his pick, not many of those guys will be, but they might be. I don't think he's really going to be a top 100 or top 80 guy this season. I think his minutes will be brought along pretty slowly. They're going to obviously running Ben Simmons at point guard a lot. And yeah, he'll come back. He'll take a few minutes away from Dario Saric. He'll take some out of Jared Bayless, some out of TJ McConnell. But I don't think the Fultz is coming in and playing 25 or 26 minutes a night, maybe more the 20 to 22 range, which leaves him as a deeper league sort of a guy. On to Memphis. Wayne Seldon drew the start across the weekend. Chandler Parsons still struggling. If you're still holding Chandler in a 12-teamer, no real point there. He's sort of gone backwards a bit in his knee recovery, which is a real pain in the ass, and it's really disappointing, I guess, for Grizzlies fans and for Parsons. Hopefully he can get back, and maybe he can still make an impact, but it's seeming less likely at this point. Seldon is more of a deeper league guy who had some interesting games in the playoffs last season, but I'm not really looking at him as a 12-team league guy. While Jermichael Green, he's having his minutes eaten into by Deontay Davis, but more importantly by Jarrell Martin, and that's making Green not someone that I think is really worthy of a 12-team league roster spot. News on Mike Conley, it doesn't look great. I think I may have talked about this last week. It doesn't look great in terms of him coming back in the next 3 weeks. I don't think he's back before the All-Star break. There's nothing that's really concrete about his timetable at the moment, so nothing to get too interested about in terms of his return. The Celtics, as I mentioned, with... The Sixers only playing the one game this week. Jason Tatum's three-point shooting has fallen off significantly. Once he had that issue with his finger, I believe he's shooting 24% from three after he had that pinky dislocation. Regardless, he was never going to keep up the 50% shooting from three, as I've stated many times. I also don't think he's a 24% shooter, so it will start to come up and normalize. And I expect him to hover around that 39 to 42 or 43 mark for the rest of the season, but he is struggling with his shot at the moment. Put on a brilliant defensive performance on the weekend, six blocks in one of those games, and still obviously looks good while Terry Rozier continues to produce even in limited minutes. The Charlotte Hornets, not a huge amount to talk about. Marvin Williams, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, they're still seeing their minutes cut as Trevion Graham's shooting continues. Now, Graham shot, I think, 60% from three last year. He's still at 40% this year on a much larger sample size than last season. So maybe that shooting's real. I'm not ready to fully buy into it as a 40% guy, but we're seeing it now over the course of two seasons in limited samples, but still seeing it, and that is really impacting what Kidd-Gilchrist and Marvin Williams can do, as is the increased performances from Frank the Tank Kaminsky. I don't think Marvin, I don't think Michael, I don't think Trevion, I don't think Frank, I don't think any of those guys are standard league viable players, but they are sort of all hurting each other in terms of overall fantasy value. Otto Porter hurt his hip again for the Wizards, so he missed a game over the weekend. Kelly Oubre started, and he was pretty solid there. But once Otto returns, it's not going to allow Kelly to really have too much of or enough playing time, really, to be a standard league guy. But one other thing that did happen, when you look at the box score, you'll see these numbers. You'll see Markieff Morris playing big minutes and putting up big numbers, and you'll see Marcin Gortat doing the same. But what it is the Porter effect. If Porter misses time, it means they can't run those Porter-Oubre front court lineups, which then pushes Markieff Morris to center, and then that moves Marcin Gortat's minutes down. So in this situation where we don't have that ability to push Oubre to the three or start Oubre at the three and push Porter to the four, you get less minutes of Markieff Morris at the five, meaning Gortat has to play more. So the big game he had on the weekend in terms of those minutes, I think, is in large part due to Porter's absence. And when Porter returns, you'll see Markieff come back and then vacillate between 28 minutes and 21 minutes, depending on how the matchup's looking. But if Porter remains out, they're going to have fewer choices, I guess, in what's going to happen at that center spot. They can't run Mahinmi huge, huge minutes. So Gortat's going to get the bulk there, and Morris will spend more of his time playing at power forward. So that is, I guess, a side impact that you don't expect the absence of Otto Porter to really impact Marcin Gortat's minutes, but with the way that the Wizards run things, pushing Markieff across to the five and Porter across to the four more often, it does have that carryover effect, and that is something that is important to pay attention to. That covers all the stuff from the Friday and Saturday games that I think is important. What we're going to do now is we're going to go back over Sunday's games, look at the key performances, and then go through those box scores, and then be back later on to do a DFS preview for the eight games for Monday. So let's get stuck into that right now. The monstrous line of the night, the waiver wire line of the night, the young gun of the night is all the same person. It's Dragan Bender of the Phoenix Suns. 20 points for Dragan, 6 triples, 6 rebounds, 4 assists, 1 steal, 3 blocks, 7 of 9 from the field. One of his best performances of his career, probably his best performance of his career. Sorry, let's try again. Undoubtedly the best performance of his career. Really, really strong stuff from Dragan. And I guess, not surprisingly, I got lots of questions about do we pick him up based on this, but now I'll tell you why. I'm not so certain about that. Number one, it came because Marquise Chris played only 10 minutes with a hip injury and was unable to return to the game. And you might say, Josh, what if Marquise misses time, then is Bender the ad? He had a usage of 12.6% in this game and shot 7 of 9. 7 of his shots went in. 6 of those were from 3. Obviously, a little bit unrealistic to expect that. The 3 blocks, he did have a 4 block game back at the start of December. That's an unrealistic expectation for him as well. But the key point here, and we don't have any extra word on what Marquise Chris's injury is like, whether it's going to cost him time, but the Suns don't play until Friday. They play 4 games in the next 2 weeks. Chris has got, he's got literally 4 days off in a row here to rehab that hip. So if you decided to run out and grab Bender now, you are going to get 4. If Chris misses 2 weeks, you get 4 games out of Bender. That to me is not enough. Yeah, it's 2 game weeks in a row. And this is by far his best performance. He is a guy that over the course of the season on per 36 numbers alone, Bender, is the 289th ranked player, averaging per 36 minutes 9.6 points, 5 rebounds, and 1 block per 36. So today's numbers are definitely outliers. It's not a great move. Now, you can add him and see if they say Marquise Chris is out for the season. There's no indication that that's going to be the case. Then Bender might have some value. But even in a situation where he's starting and playing 30 minutes a night, I don't think that he is putting in this sort of performance. I don't think that he's a lock for top 60 value or anything like that. I think he might even struggle to be a top 100 guy. I love everything that Bender does on the court. I think he can be an interesting shooting guy. His passing is good. He's a very, very good defender. He's showing the ability to play at the four and the five. He can defend out to the three as well. Played more five in this one than he had in previous games. I love what he can do as a real-life fantasy player. His fantasy stuff has a long way to go. This is the glimpse. This is the glimpse that we wanted to see, that we needed to see. But everything about this situation doesn't scream great fantasy option. You got to wait 5 days until he plays again on Friday. There's four games over the next 2 weeks. And when Marquise Chris comes back, a guy that had been playing 30 minutes a game anyway, it's going to be tougher. Now, what they could do is they could play Bender more at center over Tyson Chandler, over Alex Len, but putting trust in Jay Triano to do the right thing with the center rotation, that's a pretty dicky sort of thing to do. Not dicky, it's pretty dumb because Triano hasn't done that. We saw how well Bender played at center. I've been clamoring for this Chris Bender front court for a very long time, and it's really, really very rarely seen the light of day. And even in this game, Tyson Chandler played 30 minutes. So it wasn't like Bender was like, oh, you know, we're going to play Bender over Tyson. We're going to run with this youth lineup. It wasn't the case at all. Bender played most of those minutes at the four, some of them at the five, but there's no indication that all of a sudden he's going to start playing 20 minutes a night at center and then playing the other 18 a night behind on that. I know that's a lot of minutes. Maybe, yeah, 15 at center and 18 at power forward. No indication that that sort of thing is going to happen. And when Chris comes back, if he plays his 29 minutes, I would expect 25 to 26 out of Dragan. And everything we've seen from him so far, as much as I love what he does on the court, it just doesn't translate very well to fantasy. Love what I'm seeing from him. I could not state it more often that I think that he is a better player than Marquise Chris and will be the better asset for this team. But in terms of fantasy, this feels like an outlier, coupled with the way the schedule pans out and the reasons for today's performance. They don't make him a super, super strong ad, especially in 12-team leagues. The dud of the night. I tell a man's not hot. Yep. Dirk Nowitzki, 5-5 with an assist, 1 of 7 from the field for Dirk, 3 of 3 from the line. Clearly not his best performance, but in saying that, Dirk's still a top 120 player for the season. He's still a top 100 guy over the last month. His recent performances have been a little bit wonky. Played under 25 minutes for 5 consecutive games, but in 4 of those, he's hit double digits. He had 13, 13, 12, and 19 in those previous 4 games. There's a double-double sprinkled in there as well, and decent shooting in 2 of those 4 games. Dirk is absolutely fine to own as a 12-team league guy, but again, as I say with many of these guys, if you realistically appraise your roster, he's probably the 12th best guy, the 13th best guy on there, which makes him more likely to be a streamer target than a must-own. Anything deeper than 12, you would absolutely have him in all 14-team leagues, and he shouldn't really be on the wire in any 12s, and he's not, I guess. His ownership's 78%, so he's owned in majority of leagues. This has been a little bit of a downstretch for Dirk, but he's playing games. The minutes are okay. He hasn't sat out a game has he even sat out a game all season, Dirk? I don't think he has. I think he's played every single game this season. Yep, he's played every game this season. No rests at all. Some limited minutes on some of those games, but he hasn't missed a game so far this season. Playing in the back-to-backs, he's fine in that regard. But yeah, at the moment, it's a little bit wonky. And again, often having a streamer before you head to the fantasy playoffs, or even in the fantasy playoffs, having a streamer can be more beneficial. And Dirk's unlikely to be a high upside guy, which sometimes, you know, you will sacrifice a streaming spot for a high upside guy that when we get to March, we might expect the minutes to go up. Maybe like the Baptist John Collins, someone like that, where you go, yeah, I'll tolerate rankings of 115 for a couple of weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, I'm at the top of the standings, with the expectation that maybe those minutes go up in March and he starts pulling in top 60 performances. The likelihood of Dirk doing that is pretty bloody minimal. So in a lot of those cases, you're better off just cycling through trying to find that guy who could become that player rather than someone who's just going to give you that steady 120, 100 type production. And if he's the worst on your team, then you might be better off moving on in that type of situation. time for me to answer your questions. One of the questions I got today in terms of question time is someone said, why are you only answering one question? Because I don't want the podcast to go for 25 hours. So I have limited it. And in saying that, on Friday, I did do two questions, but I'm only doing one question because time does not permit too many more. And it's going to be a mix of fantasy stuff, real life stuff, other sports stuff, NBA stuff. So today's question comes from Connor Sullivan, who's on Twitter at underscore Daily Dribble. And he says, have you got any advice for someone who wants to get into or know the AFL? And that is the Australian Football League. As many of you know, I am a huge AFL fan. I've supported that sport all my life, the Western Bulldogs. Finally, we got our championship in 2016 after waiting 62 years in order to get our second one. So that was a monumentous portion of my life. Actually prompted me to get my first tattoo after that, after our premiership victory in the 2016 season. So if you're looking for an AFL team to follow, go for the Western Bulldogs. You know, you can get on board and support me. But if you're someone who doesn't live in Australia and you want to get to know the AFL, the best way to know these sports, there's two ways that are really great at immersing yourself in a sport and getting to understand. Of course, watching as much as possible. So watching the games, going on YouTube, watching a highlight, searching up finals games, 2016 final series, the 2017 final series. Watch the modern game played at a high intensity. Watch those clips and see how it goes. The rules can be quite difficult for many people to understand, and you can find explanations all across the internet about those rules, but just watching the game, watching multiple games, you'll get a feel for the way that the rules are interpreted most of the time. And then when something happens, you go, well, why did this happen? Why did this free kick get given here? You can just go and search it up and find the rules. Basically, the general scoring part of it is pretty straightforward. You kick the ball through the big sticks. No one touches it. It's 6 points. If it goes to the side in between the little sticks, it's 1 point. If someone touches the ball over the line, it's 1 point. If it hits a post, it's 1 point. They're the simple scoring rules. You kick it. If you catch it on the full, you get it's not quite a free throw, but you get to go back and take your kick. All this stuff, it's pretty easy to follow. There's some nuances that will take some time to get into. But the other way of really being able to get into a sport that you're not really, totally immersed in, but you want to, is playing fantasy. Now, I don't love the AFL fantasy game myself. I don't play it. I'm not a massive fan of it. Mainly because I'm so invested in what happens in the NBA and NBA fantasy world, but AFL fantasy is a little bit different. But if you want to get to know every player across every team and the understandings of how players are going in terms of form and how good they are, fantasy is a great way of being able to get your head around every player in the league, or at least the relevant ones, and work out how that happens. I couldn't recommend listening to the guys, the traders, Warnie, Roy, and Calvin, who host the AFL Fantasy podcast. Those guys are great. They know their stuff. They've had podcasts on every team so far over the last couple of weeks, wrapping up their off-season and previewing the season to come. So that gives you a really good breakdown. Also, Rowan Connolly's site, Footyology, has done a recap or a preview of all teams off-season and pre-season. So go and check out Footyology as well to get some pretty decent footy writing over there. You can find stuff. The AFL writing stuff is nowhere near the level of what the NBA is. Some of the articles, or a lot of them, are hidden behind a paywall. There's a lot of bullshit out there. I know there's a lot of bullshit for the NBA, but there's just not as much content. But you can find it, and they're the things that I would recommend. Watch a lot of games, but get into fantasy. It doesn't matter if you suck at it, but that is the best way of picking up a sport that you're unfamiliar with, and to really immerse yourself into it and listen to guys like Warnie and Roy and Calvin as they go through that. And that'll be the best way for you to get a full understanding of how things work in the sport and get to know the players and how that all works out. So thank you, Connor, for your question. Let's move in now and talk about these five games that we did have go down on Sunday. The first one, the early game, the Utah Jazz and the Miami Heat. Tabo Sefolosha got another start, 29 minutes for Tabo. He brought it, 13-6, three steals and a block, and hit all four of his field goal attempts. The weird DMP city against New Orleans was just that, was weird. He started four of the last five and then didn't play a single second in that Pelicans game. He is not really a stable 12-team league guy, more of a streaming option. Don Mitchell, 27 points, but took him 25 shots to get there. Still hit 48% of his field goals, but struggled from three. Didn't get to the line at all, but still, that's pretty good numbers. Well, Jingle and Joe had 9 and 8 with three triples, a steal and a block. And people, oh, he's terrible. He's shit, Joe. He's still a top 100 player this season, for as shit as you might think he is, because he doesn't score 10 points a game. He's still averaging over 4 rebounds, over 4 assists. He's hitting threes at an extraordinarily high level. So 3-point percentages counted in your leagues. That's huge. He gets a steal a game. So he does it in the underappreciated fantasy categories. And that's why his rank is a top 100 guy for the season. So, and he's available on waiver wires. But again, it depends on how it fits your team. But getting those assist numbers along with high percentage threes can be really valuable. Derek Favors banged his knee, but he was fine. 11 and 10 in 32 minutes. While Rocket Rodney Hood had 17, 4 and 2. Some nice scoring punch for him off the bench. While ravishing Rick Rubio missed all six of his shots. Still had the 5 rebounds, had the 6 assists, but obviously that field goal percentage was a significant detriment. I still think that he is a hold. I tweeted across the weekend that I was pretty worried about Hassan Whiteside's future in the NBA. He played 26 minutes here. It's a good line. There's no doubt about this. 14 and 10 with 4 blocks, but he played just 26 minutes. Now, I know he's coming back from his knee injury, but I have posited on this podcast before that I do think that the Heat are a little bit worried about, A, how his lack of offense doesn't fit with what they do in terms of shooting and stretching the floor. His immobility defensively can still block shots, but not to the same level that he could, say, 2 years ago. That can be a problem. And for him to get back to 34 minutes a night, I think it's going to be a real stretch. I think he's more of an impact 26 to 29 minute a game guy, and that's still absolutely fine for fantasy. But if you can find someone who still believes in him becoming a top 20 guy, I would be selling Hassan. This is still, look, it's still a really good performance from him, but there are going to be games where he plays 21 minutes and gets benched down the stretch as he did across the weekend. Joshy Richardson continues to be really good. 14, 3 and 7, 2 steals and 2 blocks. That performance from Josh to begin the season is just absolutely mind-boggling how he couldn't get anything done. Now, I know that Deion Waiters is out and Justice Winslow is out. Winslow's crap, that doesn't really matter. Waiters, to be honest, he's pretty shit as well. Richardson is leading this team and he's doing it pretty much every single game and had the game winner in this one. Jimmy Johnson, this is what we want from him. 13, 11, and 3. He should be owned in all 12-team leagues as well. While the Duke knocked in another 3 triples. That's Wayne Ellington. The Iron Shoulder, Goran Dragic, had 16, 3, and 6. And Tyler Johnson, another 16 points after he shit the bed on the weekend. While Kelly Olynyk, still starting at power forward with Jimmy Johnson off the bench. 12, 2, and 2 for Kelly. Wasn't quite as destructive as what he was in the last game, but he is a guy that you want in 12-team leagues. And again, with the way that he is playing and the way that he fits the Heat and the modern game, that's another reason why I think Whiteside's going to find it tough to get back to playing over 30 minutes per game. The New York Knicks and the Dallas Mavericks, they built up I say this pretty much every time when the Knicks play, weird stuff, weird rotation decisions. Enes Kanter had 13 and 18 and played just 25 minutes. Kristaps Porzingis played 38 and had 29 and 8 rebounds with 3 triples. So good numbers there. His shooting percentages still continue to fall, though. Kristaps just 36% in this one. But we saw Willie Hernangómez, Big Bill. He came in and played power forward. He played next to Koch, he played next to Kanter, and played 6 minutes. Now, that's largely due to Michael Beasley's absence. So as soon as Hernangómez entered the game, I reckon I had 4 people tweet me, oh, do we go and grab Will? Do we go and grab Bill? No, you don't. He played out of position at power forward. He scored 2 points in 6 minutes, and that was it. And when Beasley plays, then he's just not going to see the court very often. It was a weird situation for him to be in there in those lineups. Then we had Frank Ntilikina playing elite-level defense. Just looks super comfortable out there, killing it. The Knicks built up an 8-point lead. And then Hornacek just goes, oh, sorry, Frank, you're out. We're pulling you out. We're putting Jarrett Jack back in, and that lead evaporated almost straight away. Now, Jack was okay, 12, 3, and 8, but just give Frank the friggin' time. Frank had 7 and 7, 5 assists, 1 steal, 2 blocks. Looks really good. His defense, seriously, it is at almost an elite, well, maybe not quite elite, a very good level already, Ntilikina. Is he a guy to grab in 12-team leagues? Probably not. The minutes uncertainty is a pain in the ass. But again, if you're sitting fairly pretty, you might be saying, well, I think he gets 28 per night once we head into late February, and that's a reasonable assumption. And then his ability to get you 7 assists with 2 steals can be really, really useful at that point. And he could have a top 100 February and March, or a post All-Star period. He could easily have that. And that's an important thing that could really help in your fantasy playoffs. We also saw Kylo Quinn, 15-11 in 23 minutes. He got some extra playing time in this one because we barely saw Porzingis play at center. So Koch got all those minutes behind Enes Kanter. And we've seen O'Quinn really blow up and do this plenty of times. The problem is it's just not consistent, nor are his minutes. If he played 25 a night, he'd be an absolute no-brain 12-team league guy. No-brainer. But we can't be confident of that. On to the Mavericks. The pencil Harrison Barnes had 25 and 7 with 3 triples and 3 assists. A strong game from him. While Dennis Smith was benched down the stretch JJ Barea played in favor of Smith. 11, 3, and 5 in 25 minutes is still pretty good. Make sure that Smith is owned. While Barea had 11, 2, and 3, his assist numbers dropping. Only 25% from JJ, but he is still a 12-team league guy in my mind, while Wesley Matthews had 14 points with a pair of steals. We also had extra minutes for Salah Mejri, and that put a real dent in the Dwight Powell hype train. Powell had played very, very well, and we saw him last year have significant stretches of putting together big defensive numbers along with really good efficiency. He had 2 and 4 in this game, missed both his free throws, which didn't help. He is okay as a 12-team league guy for sure, but there are going to be ups and downs in what he can do. But he is a guy who advanced analytics really love. He's in his fourth season, and those guys who put up these really interesting advanced numbers in their third or fourth season, that's something to pay attention to. So I do like Dwight Powell here, even though this was a bit of a turd burger. Maxi Kleber, scoreless in 19 minutes. His numbers have dropped off fairly rapidly after some strong performances earlier on. The Oklahoma City Thunder and the Phoenix Suns. Russ had another triple-double, 26, 10, 11, but the Thunder got smashed by the Suns by 14 points. Weird stuff. Outside of the big four guys for the Thunder, that's Westbrook, Adams, George, and Anthony, no one really did anything else. Terry Ferguson had just the 2 points in 18 minutes, got into foul trouble and eventually fouled out. Had 3 steals. In his starting gig, but of course, when Andre Robertson returns, he will lose that gig. I think one thing we can say about Ferguson is he's probably in a regular rotation role. Even in this game with Robertson out, Alex Abrines played only 3 minutes, and they were the junk time 3 minutes, so he wasn't cutting into Ferguson's playing time. It was Josh Huestis that got those minutes, and some to fat face Ray Felton with Ferguson in foul trouble, and he acquitted himself well. He was just a little bit over-aggressive defensively on Devin Booker, but those 3 steals are nice. He's shown a few things across the last 3 games, but clearly not enough for 12 or 14-team leagues, and even for 20-teamers, Robertson's return is really going to have an impact on that. George and Anthony both struggled with their shot, but put up some decent-ish lines. Onto the Suns. Tony Warren Jr. returned. He did what he did. 23 points on 60% shooting with 5 rebounds. Well, Devin Booker played quite a bit of point guard, had 26, 2, and 4 with 5 triples. And Joshy Jackson, one of his best games, 17, 10, and 5, 3 triples. The 5 assists are nice. The shots still a worry. He took 19 shots while Devin Booker took just 17. Jackson led the team in shots, had a 29% usage rate, shot horribly. I guess the shot selection at sometimes was better. There's still some poor decisions, but this was interesting to see him get that extra playing time. Now, with Isaiah Cannon out for the next 7 to 10 days, that means Booker pushes more across to the 1, and that does open up some Joshy Jackson minutes. So maybe for 14ers, probably for 16-team leagues, Jackson can have a nice little run for this period. But after that, I imagine he goes back to a 24-minute role, and that pushes him to a 16-18-team league guy. But this was an encouraging performance. Tyler Ulis is also going to be forced into 30 minutes a night with Cannon sidelined. 7 points, 5 assists and 2 steals for Euler. So that's interesting enough, but it's not really 12-team league useful. While Marquise Chris, again, the Suns don't play till Friday, so there's very little to do here. If you own Chris, you just hold him unless we get information that says, you know what, he's out for 3 weeks or 4 weeks or whatever. He was really starting to come along. He'd already had 2 points, 2 assists, a steal and a block in his 10 minutes. So the numbers were okay and miraculously had no fouls in that 10 minutes. So let's just hold on it and wait to see how it pans out. The San Antonio Spurs and the Portland Trailblazers. I talked about Kawhi's injury already to begin the show. Manu, 27 minutes, 26 points with 6 triples, 1 steal, 2 blocks. That is a magnificent performance from Ginobili, and now he will likely not play on Monday because he played 27 minutes. It's a back-to-back, so I don't think you're going to see Ginobili play in that Monday game. He's been valuable this season, as he always is. It seems unsexy to add a guy that plays 20 minutes a night, but Ginobili can produce. He can hit threes, although not so well this season. He can get assists, and he can do enough that to be a streaming option, especially towards that end of the week when the Spurs play that pseudo back-to-back. The pseudo back-to-back on Tuesday, Saturday. You might be able to get something there from Manu. Aldridge returned from his rest, triple-1, had 30 and 14, while Gasol had 16, 9 and 5 with 2 blocks. In 28 minutes, and Kyle Anderson, starting in place of Kawhi, had 8, 6, and 5. So Anderson's a good add for Monday when Kawhi is going to be out. But if that's 36 minutes, that's okay production. But if we're not talking long-term here, so I think Kyle is more of a 14-team long-term and a short-term 12-teamer. Bryn Forbes started in place of Dan Green, 10 points with 2 assists. I just don't really value this guy as a great player. He's not a very good fantasy player. Yes, Green is out, and he might miss some more time, but Forbes is not a guy that I'd be clamoring to go and add. Onto the Blazers, Dame Lillard was listed as probable with that calf issue and then tried to warm up and it didn't work out, so he was out. So Shabazz Napier, again, Big minutes, 33 of them, 15, 5, and 7, two steals and a block. That's just another huge performance from Napier. But remember, once Lillard returns, Napier's value disappears. Now, the Blazers play again Tuesday, Wednesday with a back-to-back, and when Lillard was asked, are you going to miss more time, his answer was a cryptic, we'll see. So maybe, if you don't have anyone you want to add for Monday, you can add Napier, get that use out of him on Tuesday if Lillard sits, and then move on from there. Because even if Lillard misses both Tuesday and Wednesday, I would say that Napier would actually make your active roster on a Wednesday. That's how good he has been in Lillard's absence. So you might say, oh yeah, but it's 11 games Wednesday, I won't be able to use him. Napier would be that guy that would be that good if Lillard was out, that he would make your best 10 players in that time frame. So you'd get two really sexy games out of him. Mo Harkless also does better when Lillard's out. 19 and 5 in 24 minutes. He was a DNP CD in the last game. Two blocks and a steal for him, while Zachy Collins had 9 and 3 in 16. Saw his minutes dip as Evan Turner only played the 24 as well. Yusuf Nurkic also really coming on strong. Hopefully you're able to hold strong with him. 17 and 13 in 31 minutes. The last game of the night, the Atlanta Hawks and the Los Angeles Lakers. The Baptist, John Collins, 21 minutes for Johnny. He is the subject of the player spotlight, so stay tuned after the break for I can get into some more details there. 15 and 4 with two blocks. Mike Muscala again playing only junk time. He had 9 points, three rebounds, and a steal in 6 minutes. Unsure whether he'll rejoin the rotation and what happens to him once the Undertaker Dwayne Dedman returns, but he is out of it at the moment, while Dennis Schroeder had 27, 3, and 5, and Bazemore 15 points with a pair of blocks, just continually bringing the defense. I don't know why we're getting 25 minutes a night of Miles Plumlee. It's baffling. 6 and 4 for Plum in that time, while Ersan Ilyasova got his 28 minutes and had 8 and 9 as the Hawks got smasheroonied by the Lakers. The artist formerly known as Taurean Prince dislocated his finger, but he returned to the game. But that's why he only played 25 minutes and had 6 and 7 only. Still a guy to own in all leagues. On to the Lakers. Brook Lopez, 8 points, three rebounds, four steals, two blocks. Very, very good fantasy line. 19 minutes. That is the concern with Brookie, is that he's playing well. He's just not going to get enough minutes. In a 10-team league, I don't think I'd own him. This is a great line, but it's not representative. In a 12, he's in that Dirk situation. Yeah, he's fine. He can produce, but is the upside there for him to actually play more? It feels unlikely. Ingram had 20 points with 7 assists, while Lonzo, 13, 10, and 6, continues to produce, hit another 3 triples, and continues to be actually a really good fantasy contributor. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, his shitfulness was on full display, 14 points with 3 triples and 2 steals. Those numbers are okay in 24 or 23 minutes. He just doesn't look quite as engaged, while Josh the Hitman Hart had 12, 5, and 3 in 20 minutes, and looks really good when he's out there, closed the game, I believe, ahead of Caldwell-Pope. Not that it was a close game, but he is a name to watch, not a name to add. Julius Randle, 15, 9, and 4 in 23 minutes, had some foul trouble, while the future MVP also battled some foul trouble. Kyle Kuzma, 14 and 6 in 24 minutes, missed all 3 of his 3-point attempts, and that's another subpar game from Kuzma. He's still a guy to keep owning, but I have spoken since September, since August, since July, that I was, yeah, is it real? Is this real? Is it real? And I convinced myself that it was, but maybe it wasn't. I still think it decently is. His footwork looks good. He looks polished out there. But one of those things that we talk about often is that when a guy's not shooting at otherworldly numbers or getting this high usage, can he bring it in other areas? And that's something we have had concerns about with Kuzma. And that and his free throw shooting has been a worry too. So it's a spot to watch. It's a situation to monitor. But it's been a little bit of a rough patch for the future MVP lately. All right. I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back. We're going to talk some DFS. We're going to preview the 8 games for Monday, and we're going to look at the Baptist, John Collins, in the player spotlight. We've got a song to kick us through to the break, and it is called You Always by Big School. So I'll be back in a few minutes.
Down.
right, guys, we're back. Let's get into the player spotlight before we head into Monday for DFS. And today's player spotlight is the Baptist, John Collins, the power forward out of Wake Forest, plays for the Atlanta Hawks. He looked awesome as a projected player coming into the league in the draft. Went super excited for him, went to a perfect spot for him in Atlanta once Paul Millsap left. Everything looked awesome, played well at Summer League. You know, in passing was impressive, defense improved. Just an absolute monster on the boards. And he's pretty much done what we thought he would do this season. Although the problem we have here with him is the minutes. Now, before his shoulder injury, he had moved into the starting job. He'd moved into the starting center position when Dewayne Dedmon went down. And he had a nice little run of 30-minute games. He had 36 and 38 in two games. And in those, he had that stretch of games there in the middle of November where he had 12 and 6, 14 and 8, 18 and 7, 21 and 9, 14 and 10. Yeah, they're obviously very, very strong games. Returned from his shoulder injury and has remained on the bench since then, which is obviously frustrating for us as fantasy fans, fantasy owners. And I'm sure if you're an Atlanta Hawks fan, it's frustrating to see Collins not go out there and play minutes while Miles Plumlee plays 25 minutes a game at center and Ersan Ilyasova plays 29 at power forward. They want to see what Collins can do. Now, he's played the majority of his minutes at center, so I guess there is a level of concern as to what happens when Dewayne Dedmon comes back. Does Collins lose more playing time? But I think the Hawks and Mike Budenholzer would be absolutely asinine to remove Collins from the rotation so they can keep Plumlee in that role. I think that when Dedmon comes back, Plumlee moves out of the rotation. You have Collins playing the 23 minutes or so behind Dedmon. And then hopefully we see him play more alongside Dewayne Dedmon, which was happening before that injury. People are talking, I wasted my time with this guy, picked him up. In the last 2 weeks, yeah, his numbers haven't been good. But he's still the 136th ranked player, playing 22 minutes a game with 8 points. And in large part because the shot just hasn't gone in. Over those last 2 weeks, 39%. For the season, and this is not a projected number, he is shooting 58% for the season. So it's a really cold stretch in terms of his shooting. If he was shooting at that regular level, an extra 20% above where he is, we're talking about a guy that averages 11 and 6 instead of 9 and 6. Maybe he's averaging 12 and 6. And 12 and 6 with almost 2 blocks and a steal per game and shooting 70% from the line, which is not a terrible number. It's not a great one, but it's not a terrible one. That's a top 100 player. In fact, for the season, he is a top 100 player. He's the 97th ranked guy averaging in 23 minutes, under 23 minutes, 11 and 7 with 0.7 steals and a block with 58% shooting and 72% from the line. On a per 36 minute basis for the season, he's the 40th ranked player, averaging 17.5 and 11. Now, he's not going to get 36 minutes a night, but just imagine if he gets to 30 minutes a night, this is a comfortable top 100 guy. It's a comfortable top 70 guy. It's a pretty comfortable top 60 guy if he was to get to 30 minutes a night. That's the big unknown with John Collins, is can he get to that level? And can he get to that playing time? His advanced stats are fantastic. He's almost at 2 in terms of his box score plus minus, which is a sensational number for a rookie. You get to 2, you're a very, very good player. He's got a win shares per 48 for a team that's as terrible as the Hawks are. He is well, an average is 0.1. He's at 0.16, so we're talking 60% above average there. A PER of over 20, a true shooting of over 61. These are really strong numbers. Offensive rebounding rate of 15%, which is massive. He is putting up numbers at a huge level. Block rate well above what I expected him to put up. He just has been impressive. The team is better with him on the court versus when he's off the court. That's a great sign for a rookie, and that's not often the case. All these advanced numbers look great. His college projections look great. He is a guy that should be assuming either the starting center job or the starting power forward job, either in March or almost as a definite guarantee next season. Now, the Hawks might get a high pick. They might grab DeAndre Ayton. They might grab Marvin Bagley, Michael Porter, and one of those guys. And you could pair them with Collins in that front court. You could put them together and have a really young, really dynamic, explosive, athletic front court. I think that Collins is going to be a staple in the top 100 for fantasy moving forward. He's already a top 100 guy in 22 minutes a game in his rookie season, starting 4 games, and I think that number is only going to go up. If I am in a strong position, number 1, number 2, number 3 in my rankings, I'm grabbing him. If you're, say, 6th, and you're going, you know what, I don't like this current trend, I can understand you'd wanting to move on. But remember, the reason that he's ranking for the last 2 weeks is 40 spots below his season number is because he's shooting 20% worse from the field. So what's your expectation? Is the Baptist a 58% shooter? Is he a 38% shooter? Which one of those, or maybe he's neither, but which one is he more likely to be closer to? I know which side I'm going to, and it's definitely the 58%. So if you think that he gets back to 51, 52, then his numbers rise and he becomes a 10 and 7 guy with 1.5 to 2 blocks. That's valuable right there. That is absolutely valuable. He is still getting the minutes, even though we're pissed that he's not starting and playing 28. The numbers are fine. So I believe that he should be owned in all 12-10 leagues. I love his potential moving forward. Now, I don't think that he is ever going to develop into a top 20 guy. I'm not even sure he develops into a top 40 guy. Maybe he can sneak a couple of top 40 seasons. But I think he can be a rock-solid top 70 guy for the next 5 to 6 seasons. I think that's a possibility starting as early as next year and post-All-Star this year. I think he can be that. And if he can add, and he hit a three today, if he can add the three-point game to what he can do, if he can get his assist to 3.5 per game, which is not an outlandish thing, he's obviously not at that level at this point, whereas he's at 1.1. But I think 3 assists is not a crazy number. He's got to get his fouls under control, which has been a problem for him this season. He's averaged 5 fouls per 36. But that's not Marquise Chris. That's not egregiously high. He's got a lot to work with. Defense is still a worry, but I think he can get there to a degree. And he's one of those players who doesn't need 30 minutes a night to be a fantasy force. Give him 25 minutes a night and he's going to be a top 100 guy. Maybe he only tops out at 25 minutes a night, but he's going to lock in as a top 100 guy in 25 minutes per night. I am really excited about what he can do. He can be a rebounding beast. He can be a scoring beast as well for this team. It doesn't look like they're going to be good anytime soon. So there's going to be lots of opportunity for him. We just need him to get that opportunity, not get injured, hold on to it, and push forward. And I am pretty confident in that happening at some point, possibly after the All-Star break. The perfect DFS lineup on FanDuel: Russell Westbrook, 54.5, and Shabazz Napier, 37.5. Manu Ginobili, 40.8, and CJ McCollum, 47.5. Joshy Richardson, 39.1, and Joshy Jackson, 39.5. Dragan Bender, 43.2, and LaMarcus Aldridge, 54.3. Hassan Whiteside, 39.5, for a total of 395.9, and that cost $55,400. Very, very low cost for that perfect lineup. DraftKings: CJ McCollum, 46.25, Joshy Jackson, 42, Dragan Bender, 43.5. How in the world is Dragan Bender a small forward eligible player on DraftKings? I will never, ever know. That is ludicrous position eligibility. LaMarcus Aldridge, 55, Kylo Quinn, 38.25, Russell Westbrook, 61, Manu, 42, and Lonzo Ball, 38.5, for a total of 366.5, and that cost $49,600. Dollary dues. Let's move on to DFS action for Monday's games. There are 8 of them. The first one of those is the Milwaukee Bucks, and it's the Indiana Pacers. The Pacers are favored by 1.5, and the total is 214 points. Bojan Bogdanovic is probable. He missed over the weekend. Damian Wilkins started in his place, and for his reward for playing solidly there, he was waived. Tons of waiver moves going on across the NBA in the weekend to prevent a lot of contracts getting guaranteed. Manny Dellavedova was ejected in that Bucks last game as well. I don't think any suspension will be incoming. We will see. Everyone, oh man, Dally, so dirty, so dirty. You know my take on it. Yeah, look, you know what? That's probably the worst thing that Dally's ever done on the NBA court. I don't think it was extraordinarily dirty. It wasn't a great move. I'll grant you that. It's not a dirty play. Blake Griffin's little punch to the cheek of Stephen Adams was a much worse maneuver. I don't think what Dally did was horrible at all, but everyone really wants to jump on him all the time, and it's got nothing to do with him being Australian at all. I defend pretty much all players when there's, you know, calls of them being dirty. I don't buy it whatsoever. And yeah, the dirtiest thing I've seen this season is Blake Griffin's punch on Stephen Adams' face. That was pretty doggish to slide that little one in there. Anyway, back to this situation here. For this game, I didn't want to get on too much of a rant on that because I know that people are going to have a go at me about it. Point guard, Eric Bledsoe, 7,500 for Bledsoe. He put up a big one in that last game, 42 points. The numbers have been a little bit suppressed for him, but as always on FanDuel, the salaries are quite suppressed. So there is some consideration for Bledsoe. I think he's a decently strong option here, actually. Daz Collison with 5,600. Now that Vic Oladipo is back, his upside is limited. His floor is also suppressed, so he's not a guy that I'm really all that interested in. Same with Corey Joseph. That salary at $4,800 is really not something I'm feeling good about. But in saying that, he had 30 in that first game for Victor Oladipo coming back, and that's a huge performance. It's pretty close to his best performance of the season. So you know, relying upon that or expecting him to even push towards 25 points is tough to swallow. At shooting guard, Chrissy Middleton, $7,400. The numbers for him are fine, but they're more commensurate with a $6,500 player than a $7,500 player. He is okay for a tournament guy, but I think his upside's capped by his teammates. Well, Malcolm Brogdon started the last game. He's at $5,200. The minutes have been relatively consistent, but with the Bucks now guaranteeing the sexy boy Sean Kilpatrick, who really knows what Jason Kidd's going to do? Now, the Bucks did an interesting thing. They had Joel? I think this one's a Joel. Joel Bolenboy was a two-way guy. They promoted him to a full contract, waived him, and then got Sean Kilpatrick and promoted him from a two-way to a full contract. This is all while, over the course of the weekend, they signed Xavier Munford to be a two-way guy after they waived DeAndre Liggins. So just weird machinations going on all over the place. Waived Liggins, promoted Bolenboy, waived him, promoted Kilpatrick, and now they've got Munford as a two-way guy. Tons of these two-way guys getting waived, just dickery or chicanery all over the NBA in terms of these two-way contracts, as they just, I think they're just going to churn through them on their 45 days. Bring them up for the 45, cut them, bring another guy in, cut them. I think that's pretty much the way that a lot of this is going to go with these 45. Now, I say this all because Kilpatrick's a guy that has put up some decent numbers with the Nets, but I don't think he's going to get enough playing time to be a DFS factor on his own, more that he might cut into guys like Brogdon, or Brogdon specifically in terms of their playing time. Tone Snell went to the bench. His minimum salary, he does nothing for anybody. Victor Oladipo is at $9,400. He had 5 steals in the first quarter against the Bulls, ended up with 58 points. He's been just crushing it continually, but that price is so high that in a matchup against the Bucks, I don't really like it for Oladipo. At small forward, I do like Yanni. He's at $11,100. Recently had struggled to get to that value, but over the last couple of games, he's gotten there a couple of times. Had 65 in the last matchup for the Bucks. I do like him here at $11,100 in a pretty strong matchup for him, while Bogdanovich we're not interested in. At power forward, the Muppet, John Henson, $5,500. He's a little bit hit and miss in terms of when he can put up numbers, but we've seen plenty of big men go up against Thad Young and Miles Turner and Domantas Sabonis and put up big numbers so far this season. So $5,500 for the Muppet, John Henson, is worth a look. And on the flip side, Sabonis at $5,900, he's getting consistent numbers and consistent production. His lowest score over his last 5 has been 27 points, which at $5,900 gives him a very, very rock-solid floor. Now, there is the risk that he plays only 20 minutes and Turner gets 33 and Young gets 33, but that just hasn't been happening. So I like Sabonis here at that price. Thad at 52, not really getting there. At center, Miles Turner is down to $6,300 because this guy is averaging under 15 points in his last 3 games and under 21 across the last 5. There is still the upside there. We know what he can do, but the way things are going, you cannot trust him at all for cash, like one little bit. And I wouldn't even be feeling super confident. The only thing that would make me go, yeah, you know what, I want him in a GPP, is the fact that big men against the Bucks, Thon McCur's gone off twice against them. Like, big men against the Bucks can put up some good numbers. So Miles Turner,
sometimes may be good, sometimes may be shit.
Yep, that pretty much sums it up for Miles. Let's any other centers we know? Oh, there's McCur, but yeah, unless he's playing the Raptors, we're not really going to get too interested. Did I say Thon McCur against the Bucks? I completely stuffed that up, so I apologize for that. I was that wasn't the guy I was thinking of. There was someone else that went off against the Bucks. I apologize. Over on to DraftKings. For this one here, I do like Turner again for a GPP, $6,100. Again, we're talking about that upside GPP play, but for cash, it's Sabonis at 53, I like. Oladipo at 86 is really strong on DraftKings. I like that spot there for him. But otherwise, this is not a game to super, super aggressively target in the DraftKings universe. Let's move on to the next game. We've got the Toronto Raptors and the Brooklyn Nets. The Raptors are favored by 7.5, and the total is 218 here. Caris LeVert is probable for the Nets. He's missed the last 2, while Damari Carroll with a knee injury has been ruled out. At point guard, Spencer Dinwiddie at 6,000 really put together some good numbers with LeVert out, got those extra minutes, but that could be reeled back a little bit. But he is down to 6,000 over on FanDuel, which does, even with LeVert back at 6,000, I think that Dinwiddie is absolutely someone to look at. I love Kyle Lowry at 7,900. Point guards against the Nets is always a good spot, so that's no exception here. So he is a strong play. While DeLon Wright is at 4,800. The guy's averaging 32 over his last five. It's a little bit hit or miss, but he does have the 30-40 point upside here. So he's a GPP guy. I just don't feel super strong about him in cash. Source Castillo, Nick Stauskas, shooting guard, minimum salary. Maybe he gets some extra minutes with Damari Carroll out. I wouldn't be overly excited. While LeVert at 6,100. Well, his lowest score has been 30 across his last five, so he is a rock-solid option. Yeah, the defensive matchup is a concern. Maybe we worry a little bit about his mobility with that groin issue. But I think that he is a fairly rock-solid guy that you should feel pretty comfortable with. DeMar DeRozan, 9,100. Great matchup for DeMar. Absolutely fine to use him in cash. Fine to use him in tournaments as well. Jumpin' Joe Harris at 3,700. He had 28 points in that last game. With LeVert out now, he's a likely starter at small forward with Carroll struggling. I really like this. You could even consider it a cash play. I'd probably look more as a tournament, but I can absolutely see him being cash worthy. While the blue swimmer, Alan Crabb, he is as unreliable as they come. The Jedi, OG Anunoby, CJ Miles, both minimum salary guys for a reason. At power forward, Rondé Hollis-Jefferson is at 6,900.
Giggity!
He's been good this season. We know that. That's possibly a little bit high in a matchup against Serge Ibaka, so I think I'd fade him there. As for Ibaka, he's at 5,900, so a full 1,000 less than Hollis Jefferson. Absolutely go with Ibaka over Rondé. I think that he is cash-worthy. I think that he's got some tournament upside, and a 35-pointer wouldn't feel like an extreme performance from Ibaka here. At center, Jakob Poeltl, 4,100. Maybe some upside. It's a great matchup for centers against the Nets. So Poeltl or Jonas Valanciunas, who had 40 in pretty much a quarter in that last game that the Raptors played. But will he be able to repeat that? He only got 17 minutes, despite the fact that he had 20 points in a single quarter. He only ended up with 17 minutes. He's at 5,200, so he's a great GPP guy, mainly because of the matchup. And then you've got Jahlil Okafor, Tyler Zeller, Jarrett Allen. Okafor put up 23 points in the last game. Zeller put up 25 points, and they're both minimum salary guys. So you could look at them as GPP guys. If I'm going to use one, it's probably going to be Okafor, but I don't feel super confident or super strongly about using him. Over on DraftKings, some cash plays I like. Dinwiddie at 6,100. Hollis Jefferson is in a much better boat over on DraftKings, 5,800. Caris LeVert at 52, that is ludicrously low. And Jumpin' Joe Harris, while he is more highly priced than on FanDuel, he's at 4,200. I still feel pretty good about using him tournaments and even with some cash value. And of course, Jakob Poeltl at 39, Valanciunas at 51, those centers who have the opportunity to go off against the Nets, while Okafor at 3,500 doesn't have as much appeal as what he does on FanDuel. Ibaka at 57 and DeRozan at 88 are worthy. I'd lean more towards DeRozan. Obviously, if I had that cash, I feel more confident in what he can do floor-wise. The next game up, we're going to talk about the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Minnesota Timberwolves. The Cavs are favored by one. The total is 220 points in this game. At point guard, Tyus Jones at 5,500. Just not getting it done at the moment, so I'm not really feeling too interested in using him, but Cavs backcourt, we've seen many, many players go off. It's tightened up a little bit recently, but that wouldn't preclude you from using Jones in a tournament because he'll be really low-owned. Isaiah Thomas at 6,500, too high for me. The minutes are still going to be low. And yeah, you know what? He's averaging over a point per minute, but at 6,500, that means I want him to get 32 minutes. And I think that that's an unrealistic expectation for Isaiah. At shooting guard, Dwayne Wade, 5,200. Some strong games from him recently, but I don't feel overly confident here. The plumber, J.R. Smith, or Jamal Crawford at 39 or 35. Both of those guys can go off at any point. Crawford, of course, cheaper, and that would make him interesting in GPPs, but neither of them are reliable. Smith's going to get more minutes, but it could go either way with either of those guys. Well, Andy Wiggins, 6,400. He had a $700 price jump because he dropped 48 in the last game thanks to some defensive numbers. At that price, though, I still like him as a tournament guy. He has got some upside to go for 40, clearly, but there's no way that I want to rely upon that for cash. At small forward, Jim Butler, 9,700 for Jim. Been putting together some good numbers, but that just feels too high to go in on with cash for him. Now, I don't expect him to play anywhere under 35 minutes, unless it's just an absolute blowout. So he's going to be able to at least give you a 35, probably 40-point floor, which does make him cash usable. I just think that might be a little bit high to be an absolute lock. LeBronald, 11,400.
LeBron James.
Yeah, look, he just monsters teams. He's averaging 56 over his last five. He had 77 in his last game. I feel like he's a lock for 50, which makes him a very, very good cash play. And he does have some tournament upside. We all know what LeBron's able to do at power forward. Taj is at 6,200. I like what Taj can do for cash, but not at that price. While Gorgie Dieng, at minimum, had a nice one, 27 points in the last one, but there's no reliability with Dieng. And there's also a limited upside, I believe. Jay Crowder at 4,000. If you want to believe the Isaiah Thomas bullshit, which people posited, look at the last game. He had 17 points in 24 minutes. So it's not like Isaiah was the cure-all for whatever ailed Jay Crowder. But look, he is worth a GPP look. The minutes have been pushing up a little bit, up to 25, 26, but he's definitely not the player we saw last season. At centre, it's Karl Anthony Towns, 9,600. I'm in on Townsy here. I think he's got 55 upside. I think he's got 45, 46 floor, which is pretty good. At 9,600, I think he's a strong option who is getting consistently good numbers, averaging 48 over his last five. Kevin Love's at 7,400. You want to go revenge game narrative, obviously against his former team. Centers have been weirdly restricted going up against the Timberwolves this season, despite Towns' subpar defense, which has improved recently. Love, with Thomas around, I do worry about his offensive output, so he's probably a fade. Well, not probably, he is a fade to me in this one. Let's get on to DraftKings for this. I like Taj much more here, 5,500. I think that's really cash usable. Get your 26 or 27 out of Taj, while Townsy at 92 is also strong. And Jim Butler at 8,400, that's pretty tough to go past. While Tyus Jones, 4,500, again, just that tournament option. We go probably rule him out at 6,000, given the pricing discrepancies. Love at 75, I'm not interested in. While LeBron at 11,500, I think there are better ways that you can spend that money. On DraftKings, Isaiah Thomas still out of it as well at 6,500. The Houston Rockets and the Chicago Bulls is the next game that is up. Nene is doubtful with that bruised right knee. That's going to mean more minutes for Tariq Black, more minutes for Gerald Green as it pushes PJ Tucker up across towards the power forward position. Luke Marmute still out as well. At point guard, Chrissy Paul, 10,200 against the Bulls has been an absolute feasting situation for point guards this season. Paul has been strong, obviously, at 45 in that last game for the Rockets. 10-2 is a big price, though. Can he drop a 60? Absolutely. Is he more likely to drop a 45? Yeah. I think he's more of a tournament guy than a cash guy, but I really do love the upside here against the Bulls. Chrissy Dunn at 7,500. He is yo-yoing all over the place. Just 21 in that last game. He's at a 56-pointer. He is all over the place. Chris Paul defense is a tough one to swallow. It is really hard. I wouldn't feel comfortable about using Dunn in cash, but rarely this season has he put together two absolute turds in a row. So this could be, he could be a monster. So I do like him for tournaments. Jerron Grant and Bryonte Weber, nothing much to see. At shooting guard, Justin Holiday, 5,800. Holiday's been, prior to the last game when they got smashed by the Pacers, he'd been putting in some pretty strong performances, but 5,800 feels just like it's a little bit too high. While Eric Gordon, up to $8,000 now, that is fade city. It is a good matchup, no doubt about that, but that is a stupid high price for Eric Gordon. Of course, he can get it. So don't completely rule him out of a tournament, but that is just too high to rely upon for cash. The Hammer, Denzel Valentine, 4,500, really up and down as well, a bit like Chrissy Dunn. I don't really feel super strongly about using Denzel here. Trevor Ariza at 52, I like this for Ariza for cash. I'm not sure he's got a much upside, but I do think there is some cash value there for him. Well, PJ Tucker, David Nwaba, not interested. Gerald Green up to 5,700, and that's probably pushing it for me for cash. We saw those two strong games against the Magic and the Warriors, and then he faded a little bit. 19 points in 29 minutes in his last game because he wasn't shooting threes at 70%. Who knew that he wouldn't be able to continue at that rate? But the minutes will be there with Marmute still out. At 5,700, he's got that GPP profile because he can go off. But I'd say the likelihood of him providing that 30-point-plus value is limited. If he was still at 4,500, you'd smash him. You'd be all over him in cash. You'd be all over him in tournaments. 5,700 makes the question a lot tougher. Lauri Markkanen, 6,200. The numbers for him have been pretty good recently. The Indiana game, we're not going to read a huge amount into that for the Bulls. It drops a few of their averages down. I think he's not a bad cash play in an up-tempo game that should suit him. I think he's fine here. While Punchbob Shiploke at 4,500, he really mopped up in... in junk time. He is a flat track bully. So whenever a game is going to be blown out, you know, Punch Rob's going to put up some numbers. So if you think the Rockets are going to blow out the Bulls, a highly possible outcome, then Portis is your GPP type of a guy. Nick Mirotić at 6,500. That's too expensive for Mirotić. The upside is really capped by Markkanen's presence. He had 9 points in the last one. I'm as big a fan of Mirotić as anyone, but that's too expensive. Clint Capela, 7,400. I think that is probably too high for Clint. One thing I know is he's got a pretty solid floor. So he could be a cash guy, but there are better ways to spend that money. Robin Lopez is not one of those better ways. On to DraftKings. Justin Holiday here, a much different story. At 5,000, I'm way more in on him. I feel pretty good about him getting me the 25 points. That FanDuel price is just not exciting. While Clint Capela, again, the pricing, I like what he can do more. The double-double bonus helps. 6,600 for Clint, that's a good spot. Chrissy Dunn also, yeah, I feel more confident in his bounce back when he's priced at 6,800. Yeah, it was a shit performance in the last game. Chris Paul as a defender is a problem, but at that sort of price, I think you have to go in and have to consider that a bounce back of a 35-pointer is a likely scenario. Chris Paul at 10,000, the same concerns I have on FanDuel. Well, 5,900 for Lauri Markkanen is also a pretty good price, and I could consider that a cash option. Also, Eric Gordon, way more enticing, 7,000. I would actually consider Eric Gordon close to a cash option on DraftKings given that pricing. Let's go on to the next game now. We've got the Detroit Pistons, the New Orleans Pelicans. Andre Drummond is questionable with that rib contusion, while Stan Johnson is questionable with his hip strain. Of course, if Drummond is out against these big guys, Tone Davis and Boogie, will they go with Boban Marjanovic? Possibly. Could Boban get destroyed by Davis and Cousins? 100% absolute certainty. Will they feel comfortable giving 36 minutes to Eric Morland? Probably unlikely. So Boban would be interesting in this match if Drummond is out. But I wouldn't be locking everything in on Boban. He'll still be pretty highly owned. But yeah, look, the big bodies are there. But Cousins and Davis are big. But they are mobile. They will rip him apart. And I'm pretty sure they can cover him to a degree defensively. So while it might look like a great Boban matchup, he's not going to be out there playing 28 minutes. There's almost no chance of that. He's going to be a 20-minute guy, and he can get that value there, but it is obviously dependent on Drummond being out. At point guard, Ish Smith's at 6,500. He had 33 in the last game, had struggled prior to that last performance, but bounced back a little bit. I don't feel good about him at all at that price. He'd be more of a tournament sort of guy. You can go revenge game if you want. He used to play for the Pelicans. Rajon Rondo, 5,500. He used to play basketball a few years ago. I don't know what he's doing at the moment. I know that's a bit harsh on Rondo. I apologize to all the Rondo fans out there. But realistically, the minutes just aren't there enough for him. Only 23-minute average over the last three. He can have the big one. Clearly, he's a GPP guy, but that's really about it. Dwight Bikes getting the backup point guard minutes, but that's not really shaking us too much for DFS. But in saying that, the dude's averaging 21 over his last three games. And at 3,700, that absolutely gets the job done. I just don't feel super confident that he's going to do it again at that sort of level. Avery Bradley, 4,900. He couldn't be more shitful this season. Bradley averaging 16 points in his last five games. His highest score this season is only 37, but at 4,900, it is appealing. I would not want to use him in cash, but I would consider him a tournament sort of a guy. That price is just appealing. It's appealing, but I guess some of that's clouded by the fact that Avery Bradley used to be good, and he's not anymore. 6,800 for Drew Holiday, too high. In my opinion, the numbers have been a little bit down. Look, he can comfortably get it, but that's just too high to rely upon in cash. For small forward, Etuan Moore, Reggie Bullock, both of those guys require big performances to get hot from three, so not really thinking of them as reliable cash guys. Stan Johnson, Darius Miller, Dante Cunningham, no interest. Power forward, Tone Davis, 10-4, lots of interest in on him. He averages in the last three times against the Pistons, 69 points.
Giggity!
I am very, very happy with using Tone here. While Toby Harris at 6,800, that's a $500 increase. That puts him out of my price range for what he can provide. Really good this season, but no. At center, Boog, 10-9. I'm in on him for another 50 as well. These are two really, really strong options, especially if Drummo is out. Speaking of Drummond, 8,900. When you're going up against the Boogie foul drawing machine, it's really tough to rely upon a guy, especially one that's laboring up the court with a rib contusion. So that is a very, very strong fade for me. For Andre Drummond on DraftKings, It's Tone Davis at 9,700. That is ludicrous. Boog at 10,700. Also ludicrous. Love both of those prices. Ish Smith at 5,700 is decent also. Drummond, of course, is another fade. And not much else really changes too much on DraftKings. I have even less faith in Avery Bradley over there at 5,100. The next game up on deck is the San Antonio Spurs and the Sacramento Kings. This is the fade the shit out of game of all time because we don't know what the Kings are going to trot out. Will they go with starting lineup number 17? That's won almost every two games. And the Spurs, it's a back-to-back. Kawhi's out. Will Dan Green play? Will Pau Gasol play? Will Manu Ginobili play? Will there be limited minutes for LaMarcus Aldridge? Will Pat Mills play only one half? Absolutely nothing is known with what the Spurs will do. I would say it's almost a guarantee that Manu is out. It's a guarantee that Tone Parker will be back, and I think it's a fairly decent chance to expect at least limited minutes for Pau Gasol. So maybe that opens it up for Joffrey. Maybe that opens it up for Davis Bertans. Maybe it opens it up for guys like DeJounte Murray with Pat Mills playing more at the two. But remember, Tone Parker's back. So there's lots of weirdness here. Kyle Anderson, another one that's in play. But do they limit him in a matchup against the Kings and does Pop just give it up and go, well, forget it, don't worry about it. So much uncertainty, really tough to know what to do. But one thing I am interested in is De'Aaron Fox. He's at 5,500. He had 31 in that last game, but remember, that was with both Frank Mason III and George Hill out. Fox has started plenty of times before his injury and was playing 23 minutes a night as Mason was getting 22 and Hill was getting 28. Now, Mason is unlikely, he's not going to play in this one, so that gives us some level of consistency with Foxy. And at 5,500, I feel okay about using him in cash. If you really have to use someone in cash, it would be Fox. But yeah, he's not the most stupendous option. 4,600 for Georgie Hill, more of a tournament guy. Again, the unreliability is a pain in the ass. DeJounte Murray, Tone Parker, nothing to really see there. At shooting guard, Budrick, 4,700. Will Buddy start? Who knows? Will Buddy come off the bench? Who knows? Will he play 30 minutes? Will he play 22 minutes? Again, none of this stuff is known. It's a shocking, shocking matchup, but Dan Green potentially being out could ease things up for Bud. He's done all right in his time against the Spurs, 29 over the last three. That's pretty decent production for a young player against the Spurs. At 4,700, he's absolutely got that 30-35 point upside, which is useful for tournaments. Bogdan's at 46, and I would consider him more of a tournament guy than Bud. I think he's got a higher ceiling, and the ability to add those assists in can really start ticking those numbers over. Green, I wouldn't have anything to do with him. At small forward, Kyle Anderson, 5,700. I feel pretty good about that for cash, that he's going to get you at least 25 or 26, which is a reasonable floor, and can have a 35-pointer very, very occasionally. So he's someone to pay some attention to with Kawhi ruled out. At power forward, Zebo, 5,500. Will he play? He missed the last game with a dental procedure. Prior to that, his minutes are all over the place. But at 5,500, there is some upside there for him to get a 35 or a 40-point game in whatever weird way that Dave Yeager sees fit. Well, LaMarcus Aldridge at 8,700, no Kawhi. So you make sure you go, yeah, that's interesting. But it's a back-to-back. Do we see limited LaMarcus? He did just have a rest the other day against the Suns. So maybe he's going to be a full go for this back-to-back. But it's really impossible to trust that for any cash game scenario. Well, Davis Bertans or Scal Labissiere are interesting tournament guys. Labissiere less so because he's been bumped up to 4,800, but his recent form has been good, even though he's only playing 15 minutes, so Vince Carter can play his 32 minutes as a backup bullshitter. Love Vince Carter, but that is bullshit. Carter's in this weird stage of playing every second game. Yeah, 30 minutes, no playing. 28 minutes, no playing. 30 minutes, no playing. So we're onto the no playing part of that rotation, but I have zero trust in that. At center, Cauley Stein at 6,900. I guess if you're going to rely upon one Kings player, it's going to be Cauley Stein. He's averaging 35 over his last five, 46 points in that last game. The Spurs' defense for big men, it's not the greatest part of their game. It's still a decent spot. I think that if you're going to lock a Kings guy in, he is one of those guys along with Fox that you would consider, but you wouldn't do it all that confidently. Well, Costa Kufos had 28 points in 23 minutes in the last game. Does he even play in this game? Who knows? Literally no idea what they're going to do. Well, Laverne at minimum salary, he would be a GPP guy because we think that there's a chance that Powell may not play. So that opens up some value there for Big Joffrey. On DraftKings, again, it's a very similar situation. 5,000 for Kyle Anderson is nice. 4,600 for Budrick is pretty strong. And Cauley Stein I like a lot at 6,200. LaMarcus Aldridge, if we knew that he was playing a full game, you'd smash it at 7,700. Absolutely ready to smash that at every opportunity. But you don't know. And even if they say he's playing, does he play a half? Does he play 22 minutes? Does he play 30 minutes? Does he play 36? Too much uncertainty, but it could be a differentiator in a tournament. So don't completely write off LaMarcus Aldridge. The next game we'll take a look at, we've got the Atlanta Hawks on a back-to-back against the LA Clippers. Blake Griffin is out for the Clippers now with that concussion issue. Miloš Teodosic, who was initially ruled out by Doc Rivers, is now being upgraded to questionable. So Miloš might be back. That's going to really, I guess, change a few things in that front court, or sorry, that back court. The Clippers are favored by four. Let's talk point guards. Schroeder's at 7,400. I think it's fine. I don't think there's a massive upside there, but it's a pretty safe floor. Well, Miloš at 5,400, I don't feel super strong. But what I do feel, though, is if you want to take a GPP guy and a guy, look at Ty Wallace, who put up some pretty interesting numbers in that first game, played much better than Juwan Evans, and was recently signed. He had a 5x5 in the G League for the Aguacaliente Clippers this season. 5x5 is pretty tough for wings, but he's got long arms, long wingspan. Yeah, he's playing. He played pretty well in that first game. He is absolutely a GPP guy, especially if Miloš is out. Malcolm Delaney, Isaiah Taylor, Juwan Evans at 5,100 is probably a little bit high, but Juwan, even in that game with some foul trouble, put up 29 points. So if Miloš is out, he would along with Wallace become a GPP option. At shooting guard, Kent Bazemore at 5,700. I feel that's pretty good for cash. Lou Williams at 8,300. It's high, but Lou is carrying so much of this load offensively. And without Blake Griffin, he's going to have to do it more. Remember, no Austin Rivers either. I think he's almost a 40-point lock here, Lou. So I like him at 8,300. Ballinelli's at 37. He's a tournament type of guy. While CJ Williams at 4,800. Much rather go with your Ty Wallace, who's at 35, who is who's listed as a shooting guard here, but I think this is a really good spot for him. At small forward, the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince dislocated his finger today, but came back in. He's at 5,900. I expect a bounce back for the artist and expect him to be close to 30, 35 points. I think he's a cash option in a good matchup. While Sam Decker started the last game, and he is now at 4,700. Based on his performance, surely not, because he put up just 16 points. It is a good matchup for him. It's an opportunity with these guys out, with Blake out, and with Miloš potentially out. 4,700 for Decker is a GPP-only sort of a play, though. While Wesley Johnson at 43, again, more of a GPP guy. Weirdly, he averages 29 points per game in the last three times against the Hawks. That is, it's got to be one of the highest opponent averages that Wes Johnson has. At power forward, the Baptist, John Collins, 5,500. It doesn't feel like the minute's going to be high enough to really rely too highly on that. While Ersan Ilyasova at 59. I feel pretty good about Ersan getting close to 30 on most nights, so I'm okay with using him in cash at this point. While the table, Montrezl Harrell, Fanjul's gone, well, screw you guys, we're preemptively bumping him to 4,900. He had 27 in that game on whatever day it was, Saturday, when Blake went down. That's a significant performance at that sort of a salary. I think we know he can put up numbers. Do we feel confident about his minutes? Absolutely not. But I do think that this is an okay spot to use him. At center, DeAndre's at 8,300. Love the matchup for Jordan here. He's been consistent. He's got a strong floor. I think he's got a 50-point ceiling. I like using DeAndre at 8,300. Miles Plumlee, I do not like using. The next game we're going to take a look at is... Oh, no, sorry. Let's go to DraftKings for this one. Slammin' Sammy Decker at 3,800. Again, more of a tournament guy. I love Lou Williams at 7,900. I love Schroeder at 6,900. And I love the table at 4,300. That's Montrezl Harrell. Ty Wallace at 3,600. Also a very, very good GPP guy. And you might even consider him cash if Miloš is out. In fact, shit, I would consider him cash if Teodosic happens to miss. The Baptist at 5,000. The last time these two teams met, he had 40 points. Granted, he played 38 minutes, but 5,000 is a pretty good price. I think he'd be an under-owned tournament guy. I wouldn't feel great about him in cash, but I also wouldn't feel horrible about it. This is his highest scoring game, though, was against the Clippers team. No one really there to keep him off the boards at power forward. Yeah, DeAndre on at center, but it is an opportunity for the Baptist, John Collins. Let's go on to the last game of the day. That's the Denver Nuggets, the Golden State Warriors. A fairly extensive injury list from the Warriors. The Warriors are being really either petty or serious about their injury report. They're listing every single situation on there, often not accurately with the statuses, but we've got Kevin Durant as questionable, and Draymond probable, Sean Livingston probable, Andre Iguodala probable, Omri Caspi probable, and Steph Curry probable. Anyone who has any sort of thing, the Warriors are going, well, we're just going to list everyone. It feels very Patriots reminiscent from the NFL, where they would list Tom Brady with a sore shoulder, I think, every game for about five seasons. That feels like what the Warriors are doing. Anyone who's probable has a chance to be out. Anyone who's doubtful has a chance to be in. I feel like they're just screwing with everyone at this point with the injury report. So it is something to pay attention to. Of course, if Durant misses, Iguodala would likely start, assuming he plays. Omri Caspi would get a boost. But in terms of rotation, for those fringe guys, it is really tough to predict. At 9,800, Steph Curry, if he's playing, it's an absolute brilliant option. He is a super strong cash guy, a great tournament guy. He has been lighting asses on fire since he returned from his injury. I love that spot there. Well, the Blue Arrow, Jamal Murray, 6,800. We love what Murray's been doing, but that's probably just a little bit too high. The matchup's a positive one, but there are other better ways to spend that money. Shawnee Livingston's not really troubling the scorers too much. At shooting guard.
Nice, Gary!
6,300 for Gaz. He's put together some pretty strong games. I don't feel great about his tournament upside, and I think his floor is probably just a little bit too low at that salary. So he's a fade, as is Klay Thompson. Although if I'm going tournaments, Klay is the guy I'm going to go for. But weirdly, Gaz has the highest score this season, 53 versus 45. I don't think you'd bet on that. But I guess if you're going to go, who's the best chance to give me 60? It's going to be Klay, and that's an interesting tournament one. Well, Fartin Will Barton at 6,400. He has done very well against the Warriors in the past, and that makes him a tournament play to me. Durant at 10-4. If he plays, I love that, but we don't know at this point. So obviously, if he is not confirmed out or in before the games kick off, you only want to use him as a tournament guy. Babynex at 4,600. His numbers have dropped pretty considerably recently. While Iguodala at 4,300, he's put up okay numbers with Durant out, but at 4,300, there are better ways out there to spend that. At power forward, Draymond's at 8,300. 7,900, Draymond's great. 8,300 is okay, but it's probably more of a cash guy than a tournament guy. While Jordy Bell at 4,400, the minutes have dropped off pretty considerably for Bell here. He is more of a tournament guy than anything. Davo West at 36, probably not. Trey Lyles is crushing it. He's at 6,400, so that takes away a lot of the appeal. But in the last five games, his lowest score has been 29. He is just scoring pretty much every time he goes out there. He's putting up points. I wouldn't feel crazy about using him in cash. I also wouldn't feel great about it. So he's not going to be one of my like picks of the day type players. At center, Nikola Jokic, 8,800. Centers against the Warriors, that's normally a place where big men go to die, but Jokic averaging 42 the last three times against Golden State. It's a pity that the last three games he's actually played, he's averaging just 30 points. The shot is not going in at all, but if the shot starts to fall, like we talked about with John Collins earlier, that can really turn around in a hurry for Jokic. He's more of a tournament guy, though, than anything. Well, Mason Plumlee, he's not going to go well in this one, although he has had some big games against the Warriors in the past. I don't feel super good about it in this one. On to DraftKings, Jokic at 81 is a good tournament guy, as I just detailed. Gaz Harris at 59, much stronger on DraftKings, as is the Blue Arrow at 6,300, especially with that three-point bonus that you get over on the DraftKings site. Fartin Will Barton also at 5,700 is a pretty good cash play. Klay at 6,600 is fade territory, while Steph at 10.5 is good, but it's nowhere near as good as what he is over on FanDuel. All right, man. Jesus, I've been going way too long. I apologize for the length of this. Let's just run through the last couple of sites on Yahoo for tournaments. Chrissy Paul, Nikola Jokic, Domantas Sabonis, the Blue Swimmer, Budrick Hield, Jakob Poeltl, Jumpin' Joe Harris, Bogdan Bogdanovic, Reggie Bullock, Pat Mills, Corey Joseph, Marco Bellinelli, DeJounte Murray, and Ty Wallace. And for cash, it's Jay Crowder, DeLon Wright, The Table Montrezl Harrell, Muppet John Henson, Caris LeVert, DeAndre Jordan, Lou Williams, and Jim Butler. On Moneyball for tournaments, Lauri Markkanen, Kyle Anderson, Andrew Wiggins, Budrick Hield, Joe Harris, Bogdan Bogdanovic, Slammin' Sammy Decker, Ty Wallace. They're your tournament guys. For cash, it's The Table Montrezl Harrell, The Muppet John Henson, Sabonis, Bazemore, Taj, formerly Spencer Dinwiddie, Eric Bledsoe, Kyle Lowry, Lou Williams, Townsie, Curry, Yanni, Tone Davis, and Boog Cousins. And on Draft Stars for tournaments, Spencer Dinwiddie, Miles Turner, Nick Mirotic, Tyus Jones, Joe Harris, Budrick, Pat Mills, Reggie Bullock, The Plumber, J.R. Smith. And then for cash, we look at Corey Joseph, The Table Montrezl Harrell, Justin Holiday, Kyle Anderson, Taj Gibson, Caris LeVert, The Blue Arrow, Lauri Markkanen, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, Lou Williams, Jim Butler, Tone Davis, and DeMarcus Cousins. And another quick reminder, on DraftStars, that $400 target where that price pool looks so enticing, don't play it. It's just not going to go off. Literally on these 10-game slates, like, you can't even manufacture a lineup that gets to 400 points. Apparently what happened in the AFL season is they had it so far priced out, and when it got to the last game of the season, what they did is say, well, if it doesn't go off, what we're going to do is split the prize pool amongst the top 10 finishers. I think at this point, you're just donating money by entering that. It's only $1 an entry, but it's just donating money to keep building and building. And you look, at some point it might go off, but with the way that the salaries are, they keep rising guys' prices out of the arse, like $2,000 price rise to DeAndre Jordan, $2,600 to Steph Curry. Getting to 400 is basically impossible at this point on DraftStars, and I would not be playing in that tournament. Again, it looks super appealing. You put a dollar in, but if 3,000 people put in a dollar each day and it's not going off, it just sits there and it doesn't go off. And they'd want to give it away at some point, because otherwise it just really defeats. And I hate it as a DFS contest where people can't win. And people talk about all these DFS people, they're rigging shit. And for the most part, especially with the guys in the States, it can't happen, because these sites don't make any money if a guy is announced out late, because the prize still goes to someone. But in this case, the prize doesn't go to someone. And that's not ideal to me. So that is a contest that I am not really keen on at all, as you can probably tell. I am dry. I am tired. I have talked way too much. If you got through to the end of this podcast, congratulations to you. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeble, and check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network at LockedOnNBAnet. If you are listening to this on an Apple device, go to Apple Podcasts and leave a review, 5-star review, of course. You can also find us on Google Play, on TuneIn, on Stitcher, and on Spotify, and on YouTube. Give me a thumbs up, give me a like, give me a subscription, give me a comment. Let me know what you think. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Rick Carlisle.